Process Safety with Trish and Tracy is a production of Chemical Processing. Chemical Processing focuses on serving engineers, designing, and operating plants in the chemical industry.
Welcome to Chemical Processing's Distilled Podcast Series, Operator Training Edition. This podcast and its transcript can be found at chemicalprocessing.com. Please subscribe to this podcast via your favorite platform. I'm Tracy Purdom, Editor-in-Chief of Chemical Processing, and joining me is Dave Strobar, Founder and Principal Human Factors Engineer for Bevel Engineering. Dave is also the founder of the Center for Operator Performance. Also joining us today is Trish Kieran, Director of the iChemE Safety Center. Trish and I host the Process Safety with Trish and Tracy podcast, and I asked her to join us today because we're going to be talking about storytelling, which is something she not only does well, but also advocates for. Just great storytelling from both you, which makes my job very much easier. But for storytelling, it also helps communicate findings, results, and recommendations effectively to various stakeholders, including colleagues, clients, management, and regulatory bodies. By framing technical information within a narrative structure, engineers can make their work more understandable and compelling. What I want to know, and Dave, I'm going to pose it to you first, is what is the role of storytelling and why is it important for our audience of chemical engineers and operators within the chemical industry?
Well, storytelling, it has two, both in terms of knowledge capture and knowledge transfer. So it's very powerful in terms of capturing particularly tacit knowledge. You may have experts that if you ask them to just say, well, tell me what you know, they struggle with that because they don't know what's important. But they can tell you stories, and embedded in those stories is that expertise, and along with it, some of the context under which the expertise comes about. And then, of course, it is excellent for information transfer for people to pick up with this because they can put themselves in the story, exercise their own mental models as to what they would have done in that particular situation. And it also uses a second part of our cognitive system. So we have two types of memory. We have semantic memory, which is facts and numbers and things like that. And then we also have what's called episodic memory, which, as the name would imply, it deals with things you've experienced. And so now you're tapping into both of those memory systems through storytelling. So that's why it's a very powerful tool.
Trish, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I started to use storytelling several years ago when it occurred to me that when children are growing up, we use stories to teach them life lessons. You know, nursery rhymes and children's stories, they contain life lessons of things that we need to learn and deeply understand and remember as we grow. And then I think the problem is as we grow and we become adults, we look at children's stories and think, well, that's just childish. And we move away from storytelling because that's, you know, it's an immature, childish thing to do. But the fact is that storytelling is, as Dave said, it's something that sticks with us. And it is a great way to share information and to learn information. And that then led me a few years ago to really delve into the deep Indigenous culture in Australia. And looking at that, this was a culture that had no written language. They still don't have a written language effectively today, the Indigenous of Australia. They have a spoken language, and they have what they call song lines. And song lines actually describe the creation being and the creation time of the land. And they use these stories to communicate critically important information to people and have not only just merely survived on the Australian continent, which is known to be incredibly harsh in a number of different ways with lots of dangerous animals and lots of extreme weather and all these sorts of things. They thrived in that environment and they knew how to find water in the middle of the desert. And they communicated that through song lines, which was effectively storytelling. Their creation stories actually tell the stories of what is the right way to behave? What is the wrong way to behave? What are the right plants that are safe to eat? What animals are safe to eat? How do you hunt and catch that animal? Where do you find safe water to drink? That's what their song lines and their deep creation stories tell you about. And so when I started to really understand that a little bit more, it resonated with me to say this is something we need to do a lot more of in the industrial world because we have this really valid, important information we need to share. And when you tell it in a story, as Dave said, we get that episodic memory. We remember the story. And and to sort of, you know, highlight how effective that is for people, for example. If all of a sudden your favorite song comes on the radio, you know all the words. Did you ever sit down and actively learn them? No. But a song is a story. You have remembered the story. And you might sing along to that whole song and know all the words. That's an example of how powerful storytelling can be. You've never actively sought to learn something, but you deeply know it. And that is the true power and why we really need to be doing more of this.
Now, Dave, I know that you've done some studies on effectively integrating storytelling into the chemical industry. And I think there's one anecdote where there's a storytelling sort of circle that happens, and the younger folks in the circle appreciate the storytelling because they understand why certain things happen now the way they do, where without that context, it just seemed like silly things. Can you talk a little bit about that and how to better effectively integrate storytelling?
Sure. So this was a study that the Center for Operator Performance funded with Dr. Gary Klein, looking at storytelling for knowledge capture. And they actually had what they called anecdote circles, where they would go around and share these stories. And in doing so, the long timers often would tell a story. And again, because in that story were just key pieces of information that they took for granted, because to them, well, that's so obvious that you know, you would do that. But the young operators, they hadn't heard that before. And this particular one had to do with a cat cracker upset. And the old guy's like, well, you know, we put steam up the riser. And the young guy goes, oh, wow, that is a really good idea. You know, how'd you know to do that? And he's like, well, I thought we all did that. So that sort of tacit performance and knowledge was a way to gather that. And as part of this particular project, they were looking at, well, how do we elicit information around storytelling, and how do we then disseminate it? One of the member companies, they do the storytelling capture and transmit the results out via newsletters. There's others that use it for the toolbox talks at the beginning of the day. And probably the most important is, you know, one of the key issues in training, or one of the key tools, is use of scenarios for effective training. And obviously, when you have these, you're capturing these stories, they provide the basis for creating these scenarios and putting them into a fixed structure that you can use to help people understand what would you do in that same situation. There's you know, currently the COP has a guide for both how you create the stories and then integrating it into your company, so that you're not losing that information. And that's obviously one of the wave of retirements, you know, how do we capture that information? Well, this is one of the ways to do that.
Trish, you and I have talked a lot about storytelling, and there's good ways to tell a story and there's bad ways to tell a story. Can you go into that a little bit?
I think for me, it's really around, you know, how effective it is. And that means you need to create the safe space and the time for people to share stories, because you need to make sure that when someone shares a story, that can be a very vulnerable moment for them, particularly if they're talking about something that went wrong, something they were involved in. And we don't want to have a situation where people are going to, you know, face repercussions for being willing to speak up and share some of the stories of things they might have got wrong in the past, so other people don't get them wrong in the future. And so I think that's an important part, creating that time and space for people to effectively be able to share. And then particularly encouraging curiosity, because we need to make sure we've got people that are curious, that want to know the answer, that want to find out, that want to learn new things in our workplace. And then when we've got the people with more experience, typically as humans, we love to talk about ourselves. It's the topic we know the most about. We want to talk about ourselves. And so when you've got that safe space for people to be able to talk about themselves, and people that are willing and happy to listen, that's when you're going to get better storytelling outcomes, I think. That's when you're going to have the chance to sit down and have a conversation over a cup of coffee and just sort of understand, you know, the history of a site or why something is done a certain way by hearing about, we talk about, you know, sometimes the traditional old war stories of the old timers. You know, we've all got war stories. We've all got the scars from some of those stories too. And is really quite valuable, I think, to be able to share those. I mean, some of the most intense learning I did in early in my career was working on shift with the operators, because in the middle of the night when there was slower times, you'd actually sit down and you'd do storytelling. It wasn't formal. It was a natural discussion that happened, because you might sit there and go, so why do we do that? Well, let me tell you, 5 years ago, this happened. And we then end up with coming to that point. And I think that's the important part about creating good outcomes in storytelling.
And obviously storytelling contributes to employee engagement and the organizational culture. What is the importance of getting that engagement?
I think it's about recognizing the value that people have contributed. So by encouraging the use of storytelling, what the message you're actually sending to the people in the organization is, you have value in this organization and we want to hear that. We want to understand more so that we can acknowledge and recognize that. And I think that can contribute really well to engagement and organizational culture, demonstrating to people that the work they do, what they have contributed, is valuable and is respected and is needed. And that is something that, I think deep down we all want to feel that in our workplace and what we do. So that for me, I think, is one of the great ways that it contributes. Dave?
Well, I would agree. And I think you hit upon it talking about the, you need an organization that has that psychological safety for people to speak up. And all of this fits into the HOP, the human organizational performance drive, but you need to have that buy-in from the very top that they are willing to provide that psychological safety. Because if they do that, then you can have the learning culture, you can have the continuous improvement that HOP advocates, and that you want to see that you're learning from things that have occurred, both good and bad, to improve the overall knowledge within your plant.
Certain things lend themselves well to storytelling, process safety incidents or those types of things. But what about complex technical information? How can storytelling be used to communicate that type of information? Dave, you want to take a stab at that one?
Well, sure. So it actually is inherent in a good story, because stories talk about causal relationships. This happened and this happened, and both what were true causal relationships and what were red herrings, or, well, I thought it was this because of that, but it really wasn't. It was something else. So even though you think of, well, this is a complex topic that we're dealing with here in terms of the reactions within this particular vessel, the story itself is going to look at all these different causal factors, not apply the numeric values that an engineer would, but understand that relationship between them. So, stories are, like I said, inherently good for doing that, even though you might think, oh, well, this is too complex for a, to use in a story. If it's a good story, it'll contain that that complexity and help the listeners be able to unpackage it.
Yeah, I wholly agree with that. It's about the narrative and the quality of the story to create those causal relationships, because that's actually what matters in decision making. At the end of the day, someone's going to make a decision on the basis of what they understand, not the hard numerical data that you put in front of them. And trying to quantify risk down to, some numerical value that may or may not have so much error and assumption built into it anyway, that the number can at times be somewhat meaningless. So, creating that scenario, talking through it, talking through the interconnection, what the consequences can be, what some of the unintended consequences might be, depending on what action we take. I think storytelling works really well for technical information. And it's one of the reasons that, one of the activities that I'm working on at the moment is to actually try and create a useful workshop for people to try and learn storytelling, because you can learn the tips and how to do it well. But often, from an engineering perspective in particular, we want to stick to the data because that's what we know. And that's fine if we're talking to someone else that knows the data. But if we're talking to anybody else that is not as deeply ingrained in that data as we are, they don't understand what we're talking about and they're not going to get the message we need to send. So I want to start a movement where we see a lot more effective storytelling in industry. And I figure a great way to do that is to help people get better at it.
How do they get better? I mean, what are some, you know, can you teach storytelling? Obviously, you're both good storytellers, but can you teach that to folks? And is it, you know, you, Trish, you say sitting down, you know, a late shift and sitting down, having coffee and making it an informal thing. And then Dave talking about those sharing circles, making it something that you do on a daily basis. What's the best practice there, or a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both, but I also think in addition to that as well, you know, presenting data to decision makers to get a decision made on something can also be done using storytelling. And depending on what the audience is and depending on what the desired outcome is, will change the style of storytelling that you do, because storytelling is not the same in everything. You know, depending on what it is, if you're doing a big presentation in a large audience, you might want to use an initial hook to get people into your story, which typically requires us to, this is a weird thing to do, but we start the story in the middle of the story, not at the start of the story. And we hook them in, and then we actually go back to the beginning and take them through why we used that. And then we can go past the hook and get further into the detail of the information and the story. So the structure of storytelling when you're trying to convey some information can be really useful in making sure that you cover off the right elements that you need to, so that you're going to get the information conveyed. Making sure that you're familiar with and aware of the language of the people that you're speaking with. So there's no point telling a story in language that the audience doesn't understand, because they're not going to hear it. They'll hear words, but they won't know what they mean. So you've got to make sure you're speaking at the right level, speaking with the right terminology for people, you know, avoiding the use of acronyms in stories, because we typically, they're not adding value to the story by having acronyms in there. We want to make sure that people understand what things mean. So I think there's a range of different practical tips that we can start to think about to get people engaged in a story. So, you know, as an example, one of the stories I talk about is, you know, all of a sudden I was standing in a puddle of jet fuel. So straight away, people want to know why, what happened, how did I get there, and what did I do? I've got their attention. Now that I've got their attention, I can talk to them about why I'm credible in talking about this and what those issues are and what I did do and how it happened and why it happened and what I did at that immediate moment to make sure it was still safe and I created a safer outcome at the end of it. So those sorts of interesting tools can be quite helpful.
In journalistic terms, we talk about grabbing them by the collar and dragging them into the story. So obviously, a lot of the similarities there, and alphabet soup. You never want to give them all those acronyms without, you know, having some understanding behind that. Dave, you were about to say something.
Well, it's just one. I always like to quote Steve Martin from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That is, if you're going to tell a story, have a point. And so, yeah. You know, making sure that the people who are developing a story, that they understand what is the point you're trying to make here as you're going through this. And as Trish said, setting the stage is, you know, is key. And that's, you know, whether, you know, her standing in the pool of jet fuel. And then one of the key issues is using words that evoke a visualization of the environment. Because that's what's, you know, as you can resonate with their senses, then that is going to pull them into that story more. So the pool of jet fuel, you know, she wasn't just standing in jet fuel. She was standing in a pool of jet fuel. So that provides a visualization of, okay, you know, what is going on? And you could also, you know, deal in the other senses in terms of the, you know, jet fuel smells wonderful, you know, the mm-hmm. scent and all of that. So those sort of, you know, ways of depicting the story help, you know, put the person into the story, which is ultimately what you're trying to do with it.
Yeah, and just picking up on that as well, one of the strongest memory senses that humans have is a sense of smell. So, you know, at times you might then describe the smell of something, because that is a really significant mental anchor for people and activates the senses to remember that detail quite effectively.
And going on that, Dave, you and I have talked about that, where certain operators can just hear a pump and know something's wrong. So maybe describing that and what it sounds like when it's about to fail.
Right. Or that, you know, you're hearing these other sounds, you know, within there. And again, this is part of that, you know, setting the stage, you know, I'm in the unit with my hearing protection on and the heater's blasting. I can barely hear. You know, so that may not even be relevant to what's coming, but it puts the person there because they've been there. Oh, yeah, I've been stood under a heater and, you know, I can be 2 inches from the other person screaming at them and they can't hear what I'm saying. You know, so any of that sort of way of evoking, you know, the situation so the person can be in it and recognize it and say, ah, yeah, okay. Now I'm with you. And again, a lot of this is all getting back to trying to enable that person to sort of play along. What would I be thinking? What would I be doing next? Because that's where a lot of the training comes from. It's testing out that mental model that the individual has. Ah, I'm hearing this pump. You know, it sounds like it's cavitating. Could that be the cause of this problem that I'm having, or the lack, you know, the fact that the dogs didn't bark at night, you know, that I didn't hear that, you know, and yet I'm thinking there's cavitation. Yeah, but you're not hearing what should be the normal sound from a cavitating pump. That would, you know, that's why I didn't think it was that. Painting that picture is very important in terms of helping people understand, you know, putting themselves there and then, okay, how did you determine which direction to go?
All right. And my dogs did bark. I'm sure you did hear that. So sorry about that. Dave, you've mentioned something about the COP having a guide to storytelling. Where did they find that?
So if you're a member of the COP, a lot of your listeners, their companies are, operatorperformance.net is the website. If you're a member company, you can download the guide. It tells you how to take information to senior management to get these sort of programs going, and down to forms to help you capture the stories. You know, it breaks it up into, you know, okay, what is your point? You know, what's the background? What's the sequence of events? So it helps take them through that. So for any of the and your listeners that are one of the member companies, it's available to you. If your company isn't a member, I'd love to have you. So it's an open organization available to anyone to join. And the storytelling guide is just one part of the tools that we're currently creating.
Trish, do you guys have anything over at the ICHEME?
No, not at the moment. As I said, I'm working on developing a particular workshop activity at the moment, which I'll be taking into the market sometime later this year, where, you know, we can do some workshop and some coaching and some training to really hone people's skills and give them the confidence as well, because sometimes it can take confidence to be able to get up and tell a story too.
Indeed. Anything that you want to add on this topic that we didn't cover? Trish, I'll let you go first on that one.
I think for me, it's not maybe adding anything that we didn't cover. It's just sort of reinforcing a little bit that I think this is an incredibly powerful tool and technique we need to be using. I think it's going to help us create better communication and better learning, because people can understand the information so they can then reflect on it and create that learning in their mind to take that forward. So, as you know, I'm a big fan of storytelling, and I'm always interested in trying to make that space better for everybody.
Dave, final thoughts?
Yeah, I would just add to it. I think Trish hit it earlier, and she said, you know, people think of storytelling as something for children, but it's not. It's something that, you know, we do all the time, and it's a great learning tool and can help become part of and propel the learning environment that you want your organization to have.
Well, I want to thank you both for helping me to continue tell stories via the podcast that we both do, that all three of us do. I appreciate the time you put into this. Audience, want to stay on top of operator training and performance? Remember to subscribe to this free podcast via your favorite podcast platform to learn best practices and keen insight. You can also see us at chemicalprocessing.com for more tools and resources aimed at helping you achieve success. On behalf of Dave and Trish, I'm Tracy, and this is Chemical Processing's Distilled Podcast Operator Training Edition. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Trish.
Thanks, Tracy. You.